Radio Prague News.
Prince Charles is to be awarded by Brno's Masaryk University on Monday for his promotion of environmental and cultural issues. The State Institute for Drug Control has been fined 2 million crowns for violating personal data protection laws. And Prime Minister Jan Fischer has addressed the fundamental importance of energy security at the 10th Czech Energy Conference. Britain's Prince Charles is to be awarded a Medal of Merit by Brno's Masaryk University on Monday for his promotion of environmental and cultural issues. Masaryk University's spokeswoman, Tereza Fojtová, said that the institution also wanted to honor the prince for his considerable contribution to building dialogue among religions and fostering of humanitarian and democratic ideals. The prince will be coming to the Czech Republic next week for his fifth visit, and he is scheduled to participate in a debate on environmental issues with students of the university's College of Natural Sciences. The trip will also include a state dinner with Czech political leaders and a tour of an ecological village in Moravia. The Office for Personal Data Protection has fined the State Institute for Drug Control 2.3 million crowns for collecting sensitive data on patients. The institute was found to have recorded data from personal prescriptions without permission and to have failed to have stored the information in a secure way. The office has called the case the largest collection of illegally obtained data it has ever encountered, with 200,000 drug prescriptions filed a day for a period of 6 months. The database was established at a cost of 170 million crowns and was originally intended to combat the production of narcotics and protect patients from inappropriate combinations of medicines. The State Institute for Drug Control has not yet commented on the fine. Interim Prime Minister Jan Fischer said Tuesday that energy security is as fundamental a part of Czech foreign policy as the country's defensive capability itself. Speaking at the 10th Czech Energy Conference, Mr. Fischer pointed out that while the country had an alliance to rely on for defense, it had nothing of the sort where energy issues are concerned. He said it was in the country's best interests to participate in creating a joint European energy policy and thus protect against extortion and a, quote, fatal stoppage of supplies. Mr. Fischer also warned politicians that energy planning was not an issue for the next election period, but for the next 50 years. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be cloudy to partly cloudy, with daytime highs of 6 to 8 degrees Celsius. I'm Christian Falvey, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, another arson attack against a Romani family shocks the nation. The Czech Medical Chamber plans to apologize for banning Jewish doctors from the medical profession in the pre-war period. And we'll bring you another report from the One World Festival of Human Rights documentaries underway in Prague. Later on in the program, a look at the life of the Roma minority in the town of Český Krumlov. All that coming up, so please stay with us. News of another arson attack on a Roma family has sent a shiver down the spines of most Czechs. It brought to mind the shocking attack roughly a year ago, which almost killed a two-year-old girl and left her marked for life. Chris Johnstone reports on this latest attack and reactions.
Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer was quick to condemn the news on Monday of another arson attack on a Roma family, this time in the eastern city of Ostrava.
Unacceptable, outrageous, and mad. I am fundamentally convinced that these are acts which do not belong to normal society. I am firmly convinced that these events will be investigated and the criminals found.
Věc vyšetřit a ty pachatele najít. The latest attack bears many of the hallmarks of the horrifying firebombing of a family 11 months ago in the nearby town of Vítkov, which left a 2-year-old girl with severe burns on most of her body and on the verge of death. She survived, but will bear the physical and probably mental scars forever. The trial of 4 men accused of taking part in the racist attack should start in May. This time round, the weapon was also a Molotov cocktail, thrown through the window of a small, single-storey wooden house on a poor quarter on the edge of Ostrava early on Saturday night. Luckily, the bottle did not break on impact, and the 14-year-old girl living in the room was able to put out the fire. Police say the fire could have spread with startling speed, threatening the lives of 8 people altogether in the attacked house and the neighbouring one. At the moment, police cannot confirm or rule out whether the Ostrava attack was racially motivated. The head of Ostrava police, Tomáš Landsfeld, addressed a news conference on Monday.
We have not ruled out the attack was racially motivated, but we have no concrete proof indicating it was clearly that. We are right now ascertaining all the leads we have and carrying out interviews with people who were in the vicinity at the time. At the moment, we have no clear prioritized line of investigation. We can just speculate right now on different causes, including that.
Many Roma families nonetheless live at the modest collection of dwellings that comprise the Ostrava site of the attack. Police have put together a special team to investigate, drafting in the same specialists who worked on the Vítkov arson attack around 30 kilometres away. They will be joined by experts from the Special Squad for Investigating Organised Crime and the Domestic Intelligence Service. Since the Vítkov bombing in April 2009, there have been at least 2 other arson attacks on Roma families. One on the outskirts of Prague 1 month later, and another reported in the South Moravian town of Mikulov in September.
Chris Johnstone with that disturbing report. And I should mention that we will be talking about the Roma minority and the problems it faces later on in the show in a fresh edition of Talking Points, so do stay with us for that. Now, a lot of time has passed since the Second World War, but much is still being said about that dark chapter of European and world history, and apologies are still being made by various parties concerned. The Czech Medical Chamber now says it has drafted an apology to Jewish doctors struck off its books during the so-called Second Republic, the short period between the end of democratic Czechoslovakia and the beginning of Nazi occupation. Long before the Germans invaded, a number of Czech professional organizations started banning Jews from their ranks, motivated by a combination of Nazi propaganda and economic self-interest. Rob Cameron has more.
The brief interlude between democracy and dictatorship, from the Munich Agreement of September 1938 to the Nazi invasion of March 1939, is a period few Czechs look back on with pride. What was left of Czechoslovakia after the annexation of the Sudetenland was ostensibly a sovereign democratic state, but one dominated by Czech officials determined not to raise the ire of Hitler's Germany. Just 2 weeks after the Munich Agreement, the Czech Medical Chamber took the initiative to reduce the number of Jewish members to better reflect the percentage of Jews in Czechoslovak society. This was despite the fact that, as elsewhere in Europe, a disproportionately high number of doctors in Czechoslovakia were, of course, Jewish. Tomáš Kraus, the secretary of the Federation of Czech Jewish Communities, says more often than not the organizations were motivated by sheer self-interest.
This was an autonomous decision of those chambers, of course, under the influence of Nazi propaganda, which played quite a big role. And it was manifested during the so-called Second Republic in many ways. But you're right, they were not forced to do it, but, and always, you have to go into the more detail or more deep, so you can find different reasons for it. So in a way, we can say that that was a very perfect excuse to get rid of the competition, because if you would look at the Chamber of Advocates, or the Bar Association, as we would say, or if you would see the Chamber of Doctors, Jewish doctors were very highly represented there. And this was the way of the, let's say, non-Jewish competition, how to get rid of them.
The Czech Medical Chamber was just one of several professional organizations which chose to emulate their colleagues in Germany. Bodies representing lawyers, engineers, notaries also took similar measures, although in some cases they were not really applied until the Nazis arrived in 1939. But are such apologies meaningful 70 years after the event? Tomasz Kraus again.
It's never too late. It's never too late, and maybe we should even appreciate it more that it comes now, because what we hear from various European countries, the anti-Semitic moods which Europe was experiencing in the 30s more or less are coming back, of course in a completely different shape, but if you come to the core, it's more or less the same.
The modern-day Czech Bar Association apologized last year for banning Jewish lawyers in 1938. The Czech Medical Chamber has already finalized the text of its apology and is set to approve it at an official meeting later this week before making the text public.
Rob Cameron with that report. Now, as you may know, the One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries is currently underway in Prague, and Radio Prague has been bringing you daily reports. Today's spotlight is on War and Love in Kabul, which tells the Romeo and Juliet-like story of a couple who have loved one another since childhood, but are prevented from living together because of social and religious conventions. Hussein has been left crippled after being recruited by the Taliban, while Shaima was sold into marriage to a man 40 years her senior. Ian Willoughby spoke to the director of War and Love in Kabul, Helga Reidemeister, and first asked how she had ever found the subject of such a personal story.
To find them was not so very difficult, because you have so many handicapped in Kabul, and there exists the Center for Orthopedic Handicapped People. And there we found this wonderful founder, Dr. Alberto, an Italian, who sent us with a physiotherapist and a Red Cross car around Kabul, where all his patients were still living with their families and not inside the clinic there or the hospital. They are going there once a month or something like this. And it was our wish to come as near to the people, in their families, in their houses, to get an idea what is the impact of 30 years of war.
Is it, to some extent, a story about romantic love in a society where romantic love isn't necessarily the norm, where other ideas, perhaps more practical concerns when it comes to marriage, are the norm?
You are perfectly right that it is not the norm, but I think it's also a little bit a limitation of us as Europeans to deny that there are strong emancipation urges and needs, and that half of the fathers don't dare to sell their daughters like cows. So within the Pashtun society, you have 50-50. And so I think the society is much more developed than we have in our imagination. And that was very amazing for us, too.
How did you, as a filmmaker, find filming in Kabul, in Afghanistan, in, I guess, a time of war?
Well, it's difficult for me to speak about our disgust, to see also the change. We started in 2004, where, for example, the German soldiers, ISAF soldiers, were out of their jeeps communicating with the people. And during the years, it changed amazing. The German ISAF soldiers, for example, they are going with 80-mile speed. They have to avoid explosion attacks. There is no contact to the people, and they just work for their own security. I mean, it's crazy. And so we, as welcomed friends, turned during the years into being foreigners. Also, dangerous foreigners, and that was very painful, yeah.
Helga Reidemeister, the director of War and Love in Kabul, was talking to Ian Willoughby. And Ian will have another report from the One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries in our show on Wednesday. A reminder to latecomers to the show that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now, in recent years, the Czech Republic has come under increased criticism for failing to deal with discrimination against its Roma minority. So for this week's edition of Talking Point, Christian Falvey visited the town of Český Krumlov to find out more about the life of its Romani inhabitants.
The conditions in which the Czech Republic's Roma minority lives have not improved in the last decade. In fact, many associations dealing with Roma issues say that their situation in Czech society and relationship with Czechs is in a gradual downward spiral. Unemployment among the Roma is said to be at more than 80%. High debt is rampant, and this has fostered social exclusion and breeding grounds for crime and drug use. And in turn, violent crime against Roma communities has become, if not more prevalent, then more extreme. In this week's Talking Point, we check up on the situation in the South Bohemian town of Český Krumlov, often cited as the best example of Czech-Roma coexistence in the country. It is very true that throughout the communist era, the Czechs and Roma enjoyed good relations, and according to the mayor of Český Krumlov, Luboš Jedlička of the Civic Democratic Party, the town continues to reap the benefits today.
The integration of the Roma community here goes back to the end of the Second World War, when this area was designated for settlement, and among those settlers there were, of course, Roma families. Today this is of benefit to Český Krumlov, because we don't have many Roma families here who came around the time of the revolution. The Roma living here are the fourth generation, and they have completely integrated themselves into the day-to-day lives of the local population in Krumlov.
Český Krumlov has the highest rate of mixed marriages between Czechs and Roma in the country. There are Czech and Roma children walking together in the streets, and the gypsy bar, Cikanská Jizba, is a favorite among locals of both ethnicities and tourists alike, a kind of Roma cultural embassy in an ancient side street of this, one of the most beautiful towns in the Czech Republic. But there are cracks beneath the surface of this picture. Tomáš Zunt is the chairman of the local IKOS Citizens Association.
Krumlov je tím známý, že tady to soužití romské menšiny a většinové společnosti.
Krumlov is well known for the relatively problem-free coexistence of the Roma minority and the majority population. Nonetheless, unemployment and problems with housing are getting worse in the Roma community. There is a certain degree of ghettoization occurring, with the Roma moving into a single location. There is, of course, latent discrimination where employment is concerned. Krumlov is starting to have some of the problems of other places, characterized by social exclusion. It is not an ideal situation.
Krumlov trošku blíží, že ten stav není ideální.
In this town of 14,000 people, there are several organizations like IKOS providing social assistance for local Roma in the form of everything from legal counsel to educational opportunities and channeling of EU funding. But for all these options, there seems to be an important ingredient of trust missing, because often the Roma will not take advantage of them. Instead, they rely on themselves and on their community center, run out of the back of an automobile workshop on top of a hill. Kocero is a support base for meeting up, helping the children, and sharing traditional Roma activities. Michaela Nadjova is one of the center's social workers.
They come here because they don't trust the other organizations. They don't trust strangers. When they get information from other organizations, they come here to make sure it's true, because they trust us, because we're here for them. This is their center.
Kotzero helps Roma with job hunting. Four employees keep some 150 children busy and caught up with their schoolwork. They work with criminal cases and with drug abuse and gambling. But for all the good work done in Kotzero, the negative trends at work in the community are powerful.
It's working for the time being, but the problem is still the social exclusion that the Roma get into. They were never separated from society or excluded before, but in more recent times they're bad payers, and they end up living all together in one place. And in that place there is then a lot of crime and drugs.
And another factor that adds to increasing Roma isolation is the migration of other Roma from more distant communities that have no bond to the local Czech population. Mayor Jedlička says he differentiates between Roma, who play a positive role in the community, and gypsies, who he says often come to prey upon the town's tremendous numbers of summer tourists, and he counts on the Roma to deal with the gypsies.
Sometimes community leaders contact me and I always tell them the same thing. If you didn't have a Roma community before and gypsies have moved in, then you have to help yourselves. If there are already some Roma families in your area, try to communicate with them and discuss how to resolve the situation. That's the only model for getting along with that community. Repression or anything like it really does not help anything.
Represe nebo cokoliv jiného doopravdy tady nepomáhá.
For all the bleakness of this situation, Český Krumlov is still one of the best places in the country for Czech-Roma relations. What people often cite as a decisive step in keeping the situation on track after communism is the municipal maintenance company Dunka, through which the Roma community was charged with keeping the city's historic district clean after the revolution. Desiderius Dunka runs the company and is one of the leaders of the Roma community.
Back then, our people didn't even know what the revolution was. They're only starting to find out now. During communism, they had everything taken care of for them. They had work and the money to buy what they wanted. If the situation is better in Krumlov than elsewhere, it's thanks to the post-revolution mayor, Vandruš. When they were looking for a company to clean the city, he said, "No, we want a Roma company," because he knew the Roma would eventually lose their jobs in the factories.
The Dunka company is an inspiration for how practical cooperation between the city and the community can work, but it alone is not nearly enough. Stefan Milo is also a member of the Roma community.
I saw this coming and said when the Roma start losing their jobs, it's going to get bad. They're going to become a burden on the majority, and that is how the majority now sees us. Judging whether they're right to see us that way is complicated when I look at it from their perspective and see 90% of Roma unemployed and living off our taxes. I don't like it either. But we have to find the cause of this. We can't expect a helping hand from the Czech community, but if we don't solve the problem, then it's a ticking time bomb. The Roma may not be attacking and murdering each other now, but in this situation, that's only a matter of time.
In this most vicious of circles, unemployment leads to social exclusion, and the socially excluded are undesirable employees.
Today's young Roma have never worked in their lives. They live in an isolated society now. They're not in contact with the majority community, so that community can't have any influence on them. It can't guide them or advise them or say, "This is good, this is bad," the way it used to be. That's gone now, unfortunately.
Integration is the starting point from which most of the organizations in Český Krumlov are trying to confront the cycle of unemployment and social exclusion. And the lucky thing about the situation here is that integration means simply getting back to the way things used to be. Michaela Nadjová again.
People here in Český Krumlov were always able to accept the Roma, and that feeling is still here. They accept them as normal people. Their culture doesn't suffer here. I've spent my whole life here, growing up next door to the Roma and seeing their customs and traditions, and I like them very much and respect them. I think that's the way most people here are.
A poll recently showed that 76% of Czechs would rather not have a Roma family living in their neighborhood. One of the main things that the experience of Český Krumlov suggests is that overcoming that attitude is a powerful step in improving Czech-Roma relations overall.
That edition of Talking Point with Christian Falvey brings us to the end of today's program. Should you like to contact us about anything that you heard in the show or simply get in touch, then our email address is english@radio.cz, and you can also write to Vinohradská 12, postal code 12099, Prague, the Czech Republic. Should you want to check out our webpage, then please go to radio.cz. We will find all our programs in text and sound, plus a lot of interesting information about the Czech Republic. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care. Thank you.